A coral reef off the Phoenix Islands in one of the most remote places on Earth is coming back to life. Researchers who've been making a trek for years to the Pacific nation of Kiribati say the reef is teeming with life again. The coral had been reduced to an underwater mountain of skeletons, bleached white by warmer and more acidic water. It's part of a trend that's choking once brilliant coral reefs all over the globe. I went to the New England Aquarium in Boston to meet the researchers who've been watching this reef so closely. You have to walk past school kids going gaga over the penguin exhibit and then go up an elevator to find Randy Rogin's lab. That's where I met Dr. Rogin and her colleague Jan Witting. They were standing next to a globe, and that's how we made our journey to the Phoenix Islands.
I'm going to spin it for you first because it's pretty fun. You got to go all the way around to the other side, just sort of about 1,000 miles south of Hawaii, and about 1,000 miles north of Fiji.
Literally in the middle of nowhere.
For us, it's certainly the middle of nowhere, where the international dateline meets the equator. So X marks the spot, is where the Phoenix Islands archipelago is.
That is fascinating. And Jan, you were just out there recently. It took you 2 weeks.
Yeah, it took us about 2 weeks to get there.
When you got to the Phoenix Islands and you saw the recovery that had happened there, was that a surprise to you? Because these reefs had been bleached out and basically given up for dead.
What we saw, what we knew from 2015 expedition was that there were signs of bleaching. And we knew from information coming from across the world that other reefs had bleached. So this was sort of a cliffhanger thing. We didn't know what had happened in Phoenix Islands as of fall of last year. So I certainly went with lots of trepidation, and it was a huge, huge relief and just exhilarating to see that the reefs were in good shape. Just the first sailing into the lagoon in Canton and putting your head in underwater and just seeing the vibrancy of those reefs.
You see when you put your head underwater?
So the first thing, of course, you know, when you're looking at corals is that you don't see white. The fish life, obviously, that's something that jumps at you and almost literally out of the water.
It does happen literally. I had a fish jump into our boat. It never happened. It was really amazing. Well, I just want to clarify the timeline here because it's really amazing. So in 2000 and 2002, when our team went out there, these reefs were thriving and they were incredible. And then in 2002, 2003, there was one of the most massive bleaching events that this site, as far as we know, had ever experienced, at least in recent times. And there was pretty mass mortality. About 60% of the whole protected area was marked for dead. And over the past decade, we've actually seen it marching sort of intermittently and sometimes in some places steadily, in some places more intimately towards recovery. And when we first jumped in the water a year ago, September 2015, at this Coral Castle site, that was when the first signs of recovery were there, and they were incredible. This place had almost come back to its former glory, and everyone was worried that just at this point of restoration and recovery that it was going to collapse all over again. And so the incredible piece here is that through this year, which is the third global bleaching event, the hottest year on record, we were sitting in a space which, if you look at the satellite temperature trajectories, it's a little terrifying. We all were pretty worried that something might have happened and that this recovery would have been back to zero. These reefs survived. And they're alive. They have managed to recover and then persist, and that is amazing.
So the question is, how did this happen? Because we know that bleaching occurs when the oceans get warmer, when they become more acidic because of carbon emissions, because of pollution. And yet NASA just this week put out a report that said this July was the hottest on record. We've had a very strong El Nino event that has pushed warm water in through past this area. How did it recover?
So if I can take a stab at that. So Phoenix Islands is sitting in a really interesting place oceanographically. So we're talking about a large body of water that features a lot of very energetic currents, ocean currents, right? I think you're probably swim in a lake in a summertime when you're at the top there floating and in a nice pool of warm water, and then you stick your leg down and you feel something much, much cooler down below, right? So you can imagine that if there is a current, a stream, say, that would disrupt, interrupt, and mix these two bodies of water together, you would actually cool the top layer. And so there are many mechanisms like these that can act in Phoenix Islands that makes them pretty unique in the oceanographic setting. that can ameliorate these effects.
Does that mean to you that this is a one-off event because of its geography in the world? Because if you look at the Kiribati Islands, I saw some studies that said up to 90% of the corals there are bleached. And in the area around North America and the United States, there's expectations that 95% of the corals will be in conditions that will cause bleaching. So do you think that, you know, there's anything we can learn from this? And is it just a one-off sort of a thing?
I think there's two main factors at play. One is geography, and one is biology and conservation, which are going to go hand in hand here. You know, Kiribati is a huge country. You alluded to these other islands in Kiribati. There are three island archipelagos that each archipelago, sort of they span the spread of the continental United States. So one in California, one in New York. And so geography matters. Where these El Nino sort of epicenters form, where the hot spots are in the ocean matter. And also what protections are around them. You know, any reef that is already compromised because of a barrage of threats and stressors is going to be less prepared to deal with whatever the climate or the oceanographic features throw at them. The Phoenix Islands Protected Area is a no-take zone. And that's true as of January 1st, 2015. So there's no fishing. There is no coastal development. There's 29 people total who live there. You know, they just don't have a lot of the stressors that more coastal reefs or more highly visited reefs see. And so that gives us all the preparation we could possibly do, and then we got a little lucky.
There are souvenirs all over this lab from the many trips these scientists have made to the rejuvenated reef in Kiribati. Jan Witting opens a jar that smells like the ocean to show me a specimen he's preserved inside. It looks like a see-through spider, but really it's a larva of a lobster that lives on the reef. And the real prize is in a small back room that's filled with bubbling aquariums. Randy Rogin peers inside to show me her happy, fuzzy corals, each about the size of her fist.
And you can see some of them that have their tentacles out and they're brown.
Yeah, they're squirming around.
I know, they're doing their thing. When you look at them like this, you can really tell that they're animals, right? They look like anemones. They look like their relatives. And you can see some white ones, too. And the white ones, people typically think of as bleached, right? What we just talked about in tropical corals. But this isn't a tropical coral. This is a temperate coral that has the potential to transform our understanding of tropical corals because it can live with and without its symbionts that are so necessary for tropical corals but aren't as necessary here.
And symbionts are?
Symbionts are these tiny little intracellular algae that photosynthesize like plants. That is what give corals food in the tropics.
And when there's bleaching going on with the corals, those algae are expelled, and that's why the corals become white.
Yeah, but not here. Huh. Here, they just eat.
Interesting. So what do these corals have to teach us about what's going on across the globe with the coral reefs and the bleaching?
Two things. First of all, these corals live here in New England, which means that just like you and me, they deal with the hottest of hot summers and the coldest of cold winters, and they survive all of that. So this is a coral that's living in the extremes of what a calcifying coral can handle. And the second thing is this special property where they can live with and without their symbionts, which allows us to really ask what the role of symbiosis is in a way that you can't in a tropical coral. Because in a tropical coral, if you take away the symbionts, the coral's stressed and then dies. And here, you can take away the symbionts, and the coral's still okay. So we can ask that question.
Are you hopeful that there's a solution to this problem, or do you think we've sort of already turned the corner and are facing what could be long-term widespread destruction?
You know, look, we've already done a global experiment. We have more people on the planet than we've ever had before, and we are breaking new records every year. I think with climate change, people keep waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? They wait for the big disaster, but in reality, it's all these little disasters that accumulate and all these record-breaking events that are happening all the time. But there are still a lot of amazing spaces on this planet from which new life can regenerate and from which we can see recovery. And so I have great hope that all the work that so many of our science colleagues have done showing all of the various impacts and manifestations of climate change is a real and serious thing. Now it's a political issue, and I'm hoping that people can do what they need to do to get it done.
And seeing the regrowth in the Phoenix Islands, is some of that hope that you're talking about?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we have to remember that these reef environments, these atolls, right, they're absolutely amazing formations. The corals have built the island itself on top of a volcano that's eroding away. And they've been around for tens of millions of years. When we're talking about the climate change issues, we're talking at this stage with the time spans of decades to some, you know, a century or so. We have to remember that these organisms have a much longer time view, if you will. So we need to set aside places where we make sure organisms will survive and then repopulate.
Hey, have you ever been to American Samoa reefs? Did you ever dive the Valley of the Giants?
Yes.
So have you seen Big Mama?
Yes.
This is like an incredible coral.
I've heard of it.
She is the size of this room, easily, more bigger than that. Yeah, and she's around. It's been around pre-Columbus, and she survived all of this. And to me, that is just one of the icons of hope, right? There are corals that have made it through everything we've thrown at them thus far. And there are places in the Caribbean that just evoke reactions of what the oceans were looked like before a lot of demise and destruction. There are some really incredible spots left, and those are the places that I really look to as places to get hope from.
Ocean optimism, I like that. Well, thank you very much for inviting us into your lab.
Thank you.
Randy Rogin is a scientist at the Anderson Cabot Center for Ocean Life at the New England Aquarium, and Jan Witting is an oceanographer with the Sea Education Association in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. We've got photos from their most recent trip to the Phoenix Islands. You can see the blooming coral garden for yourself at hereandnow.org.